to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
JVD, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. This week marks the six-month anniversary of the devastating fires that took place in Los Angeles, and in particular a place called Altadena, the Eden Fires. And we promised, we said we would, you know, our shows would not be a one-and-done thing. But there's several things that are very disturbing. First, many of you saw with horror the way that the current administration acknowledged that 6 months anniversary by bringing the Army and ICE and everybody to MacArthur Park and disrupting and doing a show of force. There were more people at MacArthur Park looking for a fruit vendor who may not have had all their paperwork in line than they did with the 100 people who died in Texas because of the floods. I want you to think about that. You didn't see that sort of power. Maybe that could have been prevented if we were using our resources more wisely. But it was an indication that this current administration is vindictive, and it's not about quote-unquote law and order. It's about being cruel and trolling people at the highest levels, using tax dollars to do so. In the shadows of all that is the challenges that faces the predominantly black community of Altadena. And that was something that was kind of lost even when the fires happened. Everybody focused on Palisades. They looked at some of the celebrities that lost stuff. Trump came to town. He focused on the governor and what was going on in those areas. But Altadena, which has been home to many and has its rich history, is still challenged. Joining us is James Farr. Not only is he very familiar with the area, but the work that he has done as a journalist for publications like LA Progressive and KBLK Radio has led to him actually getting a show, an actual radio show that weekly, you know, focuses in on Altadena. Not only does he have the show, but the brother put out a couple of movies or documentaries on Altadena, which, you know, was shown the other week for the San Francisco Black Film Festival. So you've been staying busy with this, and I can only imagine your head is swirling with so much going on. Let's start with just this six-month anniversary and just your thoughts on what we saw at MacArthur Park.
Davey, thank you so much for having me back on and honoring that commitment from Hard Knock Radio to, as we're doing at KBLA, Talk 1580 and Conversation Live Altadena Rising, we're not forgetting what happened exactly 6 months ago. Depending upon where you were in Altadena and in this area, the fire started last night or it happened overnight, which would be today. So I appreciate you holding space for that. I got off the air yesterday and I checked my feeds and I started to see what was happening over at MacArthur Park, which isn't too far from the station. And I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, I just could not believe that. I mean, we've had the National Guard here for a month or so. We've had Marines here, you know, for a month or so. We had National Guards back in January, right?
When the fire took place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the fire took
place. In Altadena, but nowhere else.
In Altadena. And so I had to ask myself, am I normalizing this? Right? Is this what a Monday afternoon, midday should be like in Los Angeles? Never mind the fire, right? And that it's a 6-month anniversary. But you raise a great point in your opening. Those resources, that energy could be helping folks in Texas. We don't need this here in Los Angeles. Our city was doing just fine until this petty punitive stuff showed up.
Real talk. What has been happening with Altadena itself? Now, I know you just wrote an article in the LA Progressive. We'll post it up on our site, you know, at least a link that kind of shows the reflection of it. But the challenges when we talked, and we did a few shows, were like the vultures were circling around, the corporate vultures, and they were, you know, wringing their hands and going, ooh, boy, we can now get this place called Altadena. And so, you know, that was the fault line. Where do we stand, you know, with respect to that? Were you able to stave them off, or are they entrenched in the community now?
No, they're here. They've been here before the fire. That's the first thing. Their prospectors come through this area. It's a very desirable area. So it's not uncommon for people to get unsolicited offers on properties, distressed properties especially. Folks are selling. A lot of folks are holding out. It's a choice that people are having to make based upon resources, right? There's a lot of conversation around this idea that, you know, we're in a space of recovery. And that's not what it is, Davey. Right now, people still need relief. They need relief so that they can have the resources to make the best decisions. There's maybe 20 permits have been approved for
really?
Folks to rebuild.
That's 20?
Somewhere around there. It was a slow process. Well, let's back this up. If prior to January 6th, right, if you wanted to remodel your kitchen or your bathroom or do something else around your home, you're looking at an 8-12 month, you know, a little bit longer than a year process, just going through a permitting approval plan check, just through that process, right? Now let's put a multiplier on that of 10,000x, right? of things that need to be done. And so the systems weren't set up to handle the rush of applications. So they needed
to catch them. They didn't streamline it even with the fire, which is now a factor, which is why you have so many people.
You're asking if government did something swiftly and efficiently. No, you're asking if the government adapted to technology in the immediacy. No, they've made some improvements and some adjustments to try to streamline the process, and they're catching up on that. But prior to just a few weeks ago, when the Board of Supervisors, Los Angeles County Board of Supervisor, Catherine Barger, who represents this area, put forth a motion to have people's permit fees deferred, not waived, deferred. That language is problematic. You know, it kind of makes people feel like, well, okay, is this on the back end? And so she said it's the board's job to try to find the money so that people don't have to, you know, take on that extra burden of, you know, permit fees that can easily run $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 when you tally it all up.
Really?
Yes.
Journalist James Farr is with us this afternoon. As you were talking, James, I kept thinking about all the federal funding that was cut. And you said petty punitiveness, right? You're all in Southern Cali. I don't like you. we're going to hold up the money. Has that contributed to people not getting the relief? And I'm asking this seeing what happened in St. Louis with a tornado showing up, right? No warning signs because of the cuts, right? Houses destroyed, FEMA nowhere in sight. And because it was mostly black people that got devastated by this tornado because it happened in North County, no news coverage. You don't know Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer on the diocese of the Democratic Party saying, we demand justice because North County is Ferguson. Ferguson is where all those activists are. So we're just going to act like it didn't happen, that those places weren't destroyed. But the result of that, the reason why this happened was because resources were pulled. And when people needed stuff, they didn't come. We're seeing this in Texas. You know, we just had organizers on yesterday, and they're the ones that are collecting the clothes and doing all that. They were like, we ain't seen FEMA yet. And they're in Texas. So now with Los Angeles, and even though Altadena technically is not Los Angeles City, Mayor Karen Bass doesn't run Altadena, it's still LA as far as everybody else is concerned, you know, including this president. So removing funds and resources, is that something that is adroitly felt, you know, by the folks in your area?
You know, that's an interesting question. FEMA, first of all, can make available upwards of, between FEMA and the SBA, upwards of about $100,000, which is to, you know, it has various conditions of use and how you file the application and, you know, what the purpose is. I know some people that have received those disbursements, and I know a lot more that have not. Now, that has nothing to do with the, you know, cuts that are happening right now. That should have already been in the pipeline. I think what we're seeing again is government operates at two speeds, slow and slower. And so while people are in a pipeline, while people are getting documents in, you know, and sure, the SBA has loans, right, at very favorable or low interest rates, you know, for others, still has to be repaid. So I don't know that we've seen the impact of the cuts that are happening kind of recently versus what should have already been in place prior to January 6th and 7th.
Do you anticipate, you know, those cuts starting to hit people as time moves on? It might take a while for the wave to hit.
Well, David, if I cut you in your right arm and then cut you in your left arm, you are already bleeding, right? So it's, you know, people are already in such a space of flux, right? And trying to figure things out and, you know, trying to make both ends meet. And, you know, some may have even taken payouts or settled with their insurance companies prematurely because in the immediacy, they needed cash, right? And they were trying to figure out where they are. So some are going back in with the public adjusters to try to reopen up claims and try to, you know, get more resources out of their insurance. But what the insurance companies, that's the crime. I mean, I expect the government to move like they're moving, but the stonewalling, stalling, the way that they are making people have to go through evidencing things that are ashes, you know, is both problematic and traumatic for folks.
Can you break that down for us? What do you mean by that? What exactly is happening?
Everything that I see in your background is gone, right? And now you need to, you know, you had a platinum record from Public Enemy, for example, right? How do you replace that, right?
Right.
You have your notes, you have all of your archives of your radio program somewhere on a hard drive somewhere, right? How do you replace that? How do you put a value on that? You have your entire history of the Black Panthers. I'm thinking of Elder Martin Gordon, things like that. You had a piano, you had things. So what some lawyers are doing creatively is literally taking people shopping. Let's look at how much does a spoon cost? Did you have, what kind of blender did you have? Did you just have the $39 blender from Walmart, or did you have one of those $600 ones that makes, you know, fancy smoothies, right? So that kind of nuance. Or reviewing photos from social media, that shows that lamp in the corner, that shows that picture on the wall. So they're having to be creative. But when you're dealing with people on the other end of a phone, an email, an extension that has no connection, and you're a claim, it could be a bit taxing on people. You know, it's a full-time job trying to put your life back on track to where it was 6 months ago.
People did banks or anybody give folks any relief? Did they say, look, let me defer these payments for a few weeks, you know, a few months, get yourself together? Did Gavin Newsom come in and, you know, help folks out or what? Because, you know, we're talking about insurance. I mean, the state famously put an insurance commissioner in charge, and they were supposed to regulate and make sure that the insurance does right by people. And it sounds like, you know, at the very least, they're making life very difficult.
Well, you know, there is legislation that's being proposed right now that would provide some sort of moratorium kind of in a 90-day cycle. But right now, 6 months later, you're paying rent, you're paying your mortgage on a house that doesn't exist, mind you. The county assessor did provide some relief on assessing the property. For example, if folks had prepaid their property taxes, you know, at the beginning of the year, they received a refund because the property doesn't hold the same value. No, the banks aren't in the business of providing relief, right? That's not what they do. I think the bigger question, and it may be some time before we really know this. You know, there's estimates that of upwards of $1 billion have been raised in relief funds through various charitable organizations. How that money makes it back to the streets and into the hands of the people who need it most?
Oh, so that's a question right now.
Yeah.
A lot of people raise money for Altadena.
Yes.
But we ain't seeing it.
Not the people I'm talking to. You know, I mean, but
let's give some context.
It's a drip. It's a drip, I give you a sandwich, right?
Let's give some context. As you pointed out in your article in LA Progressive, James Farr, who's our guest, you personally know 200 families.
Yes.
And you're a pretty sharp journalist. I mean, you know, and you're on the air talking about it every week, right? Yes. So you a journalist. You're one of them people, you know. And you know, like, just the facts. I need the facts. So if you don't know where that money is going, that's saying a lot. Because this is like, this is what you do. And you're like, man, I don't know. But $1 billion has been raised?
Well, I could tell you what I do know is that come next year, May, when 990s are reported, everything will come to the light, right? We'll see who got money. We'll see where that money was distributed to other kind of smaller organizations. We've even had here locally one institutional nonprofit, Pasadena Community Foundation, establish an offshoot just to handle the $60 million or $70 million that they received from various sources. But the gatekeeping process, right, of how they want to distribute that money, some nonprofits I read, and a specific one escapes me right now, but in their bylaws, it says that they only have to distribute 5% of money that they raise from donations. So they are banking this money for reserves for the future. And a lot of what you hear is, well, we want to make sure that we have money because this is a long-term process. When it's very simple, some people need $500,000. Some people need $1 million. If you're rebuilding, let's just do simple math, 1,000-square-foot home at $500 to $600 per square foot. And that's just a simple home, right? Your rebuild cost is $500,600,000. That's the need.
Yeah, when you're talking about $1 billion, you know, because we hear that word tossed around a lot, you know, we're like, well, he only got a billion because somebody's being talked about like Jeff Bezos that's worth hundreds of billions, right? But a billion, man, you can't spend that in a lifetime, right? And we're talking about, you know, can you put the foundation down on my house? That ain't costing you millions. Maybe if you have a big house, it might. But if you're talking about, I just got 60 million, here's two. Go ahead, finish your thing. That's one family. Here, what do you need? As you said, 500? Here you go, done. What do you need, James? What, half a mil? Gotcha. And you keep going down the road and everybody should be made whole. How's this not happening?
Well, that's interesting that you say that B word, right? That billion. Recently, a few years ago, someone got luckier than luckier, right? And won $1 billion in a Powerball up in Altadena. You know, early reports, he was buying up mansions around Los Angeles, but it was just reported he had formed an LLC and he is buying properties in Altadena, a local guy. You know, working class guy. But here's the thing, though, Davey, to your point, I think he's bought 15 properties.
Wow. Right?
So wow. If you and I raised $100 million tomorrow, right, how many people could we really help?
Wow. Wow, wow. And there's no regulation on that.
No, there's no regulation. I mean, I believe what he is doing is with the best of intentions, right? Being from the community, making his community and family, his immediate community and family whole, right? That's what's happening. But to your point, you know, you spend what you want to spend on a wedding, right? 50, 60 million. You know, I know how y'all do it up there. Y'all balling.
Nah, man, we went to snow building and kept our cost under 2 G's.
You know,
2 G's is what we paid. I don't know about you,
but you know, and not to pocket watch, but this country has enough wealth, right? Yeah, it has enough wealth that some relief could be provided for these people.
There was concern that, in fact, it reverberated up here through a number of people that put off projects up here in Northern Cali because of what was going on in Altadena and the anticipation that construction costs were going to go up. A lot of people will be down there rebuilding, not just in Altadena, but, you know, also in Palisades and other areas that were devastated by the fires. And there was also concern because at that time, Trump was starting to take office and talking about tariffs. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if that had played a factor in any of this. You know, he's saying tariffs one minute, then people raise the prices. Then he goes, no, I'm not going to put the tariffs on. But then your prices are raised. So do you take them down? You know, so all of a sudden, what would have been $100 to repair in anticipation of tariffs, you raised it to $300. Mm-hmm. And now the cost for doing business, even though you're not paying that extra three, is locked in. And so maybe a half a million isn't enough because there's a tariff, you know, factor into either construction materials or some other thing we didn't anticipate. Has that been a factor?
Well, you can't build until you have a permit. So that I think there was a lot of fear mongering in that idea, you know, Trump doing the Trump thing. And it was a lot of things that people just didn't know. So that was all speculation, right? That was operating from a mindset that in a few days, a few weeks, a few months, we're going to see this construction at mass, right? That people, like a whole town, is going to start to be being rebuilt right away, which would, you know, put the crush on or the price increase on materials because simple supply and demand. Well, that's right. Kind of subsided because you can't build until you get a permit. You can't build until you have the financing in place, right? And then there's just the process of rebuilding itself. Then you have to figure out, well, I can rebuild, but, you know, if I turn in a 360, there's no homes around me that are going to be rebuilt because each of my neighbors, right, are in individual financial situations. Some are rebuilding, some are not. This community looks a lot different now because in 6 months ago, you had masonry structures that were up. You know, you still had the smell of smoke and just the freshness right. of it all, right? Now it's what we knew then is that this whole community has to be leveled. So they're just about at about, wow. I think, 80, 90% of debris cleanup.
Wow.
But those masonry structures that once stood, that wrought iron gate that was in place, those staircases that were in place, all that has been leveled. So the topography and the perspective of how you look at the community now, I mean, only thing that could make it worse is if the trees were gone.
Talking with James Farr, looking back 6 months ago, the Eaton fire. A lot of anger directed at the electric company. You know, it's not Con Ed, what's it called?
Southern California Edison.
Yeah. Edison, thank you. What's been happening with them? Are they just settling things quietly out of court, kind of like the way PG&E was doing, or are they on the hook for any of this?
We're very early in that process. Yesterday was let's split the hairs. Yesterday was the deadline for people to file governmental complaints against the county of Los Angeles, perhaps for not receiving notification, et cetera, et cetera. As of Friday, no one had filed a claim to sue the county. That's important because most lawyers are advising plaintiffs that suing the county it may take away from any settlement or any responsibility of Southern California Edison. That's one thing. The other thing is the cost of litigation, right? Government has an endless piggy bank, right? And so they're much more likely, because they don't have to answer to shareholders, right?
Right.
They're much more likely to drag something out. As it relates to Southern California Edison, yes, lawsuits have been filed, you know, in the hundreds, if not thousands. That process will have to make its way through court. They've already admitted that they are likely the cause of the fire. Their power line that had been decommissioned back in 1974 or something like that was still upright. And, you know, we've seen time-lapse videos. We've seen a bunch of other illustrations and animations. It's pretty clear that this fire in Altadena, right? And it's very important that this is not Katrina. This is not Texas. This is not Palisades, in the fact that there's a causation here. This was human negligence. This was corporate negligence that started this fire. These other things and events in other places would fall under force majeure. You know, natural, it's an act of God. It happened. This is a little bit different. So I do believe at some point, to your point, how PG&E did, at some point people will receive compensation. Their estates will receive compensation, but we may be 5, 7, 10 years out from that actually happening.
James, as we close up, you know, based upon all the interviews, stories that you covered, what is the biggest challenge or thing that is not being spoken about that needs to be put forth, you know, front and center around all that's happening in Altadena?
I think Black folks are lost in this story again.
Really?
I think Black folks are being told how to feel, what they need, what they should do, how they should organize, that they should be, you see, you know, unity once again weaponized. You know, you need to agree with us and we need to tell you how to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Black, in terms of loss, that usually means there's a perspective that's out there that's not being shared. I think you do an excellent job bringing it to the forefront, but what's lost that we need to dig deeper into?
You know, it's it, this is empathy. This is compassion. This could be you, Davey.
Yeah.
That's I think that is what folks need to hold on to, right? This could be you, be it an earthquake, be it a fire, it could be wherever you are, right? It could be you. And you know, it's easy to ignore disasters or, you know, events of this magnitude and, you know, for it to get lost in the news cycle and, oh, it's 6 months. Wow. Oh, okay. You know, well, I guess everything's okay. Right. That's, it's just, it could be you and, yeah. And that disasters don't discriminate, but recovery does.
Real talk. Repeat that again.
Disasters do not discriminate, but recovery does.
Yeah, we should have learned that from Katrina.
Yes.
And for people, you know, this will be, what, the 20th anniversary of Katrina?
Yes.
And we should have learned that from the Loma Prieta.
Yes.
Since, you know, both of us, you know, you're from originally from Northern Cali. So remember the marina, how quickly they fixed that marina?
Real quick.
And we still got cracks in West Oakland where the freeway fell down. You know what I mean? And we're going on, you know, like 30 years or maybe even longer.
It's longer than that, brother.
Longer than that, right? You know, Loma Prieta was 89. Yeah. So that's something to think about. Like, you know, marina, you're whole. You know, the houses are palatial. You don't even know something happened.
No.
But, you know, you drive down there and potholes in the street and everything else, and you know, and it's still a house around the corner that ain't still been repaired. Because I think what we lose sight of, I'm paying for a house. No, I'm paying for an apartment while I'm waiting for my house to get fixed, and that apartment might have a rent that's more than my mortgage now. You know, because I house is already paid for. But now I have this crazy burden that's on there. And then, you know, your kids got to go to college and you're still waiting for stuff to go. So you start cutting corners, you know, maybe I don't need a roof right now. Maybe I need a cheap, you know what I mean? And next thing you know, your house ain't really completely repaired.
You know, David, you bring something. I want to make sure that we land this in there. It's our seniors, the elders. Yeah. Altadena had an aging in place community. And so you have folks who had been on their properties for generations, for decades. I'm reminded of an elder who shared with me how disoriented she is living in an apartment. Right?
Wow.
The ambient and environmental noise, right, from living in an apartment, right? It's not the creak of her neighbor's gate that she's familiar with, right? It's the kids jumping up and just how unsettling that is, right? That is so heartbreaking. A lot of folks, you know, going back into the 50s when eminent domain and 60s and eminent domain, when they were building a freeway, we've heard that story before, right? Building a freeway through the original Black settlement in Pasadena, which right. Because of
was that Sugar Hill?
No. It's the 210 freeway, 710 freeway stub. So what people know is old Pasadena, you know, the tour.
Oh,
you're
right, right.
The Colorado Boulevard that the parade goes down. That was the Black community originally.
Right, right.
And so because of redlining and housing restrictions at that time and where Black folks could and could not go, it's how you end up with folks in Duarte, Monrovia, and kind of Eastern in the San Gabriel Valley, but a lot shot right up to Altadena, right? So you have families a generation or two apart, some who lived through that first part of it, were ran out of their homes once, only to have it repeated again 30, wow. 40, 50 years or so later.
And that's just one aspect.
That's just one. You're right.
Because, you know, those folks have the challenge of recovering their home. But what happens when I lived in an apartment? What happens if I was renting, right? And those things get factored in. And, you know, when somebody's like, you know, this is my excuse now to, you know, maybe I should do the luxury apartment now, you know, and to that degree, with so many rental properties being owned by corporations, their recovery might be a lot quicker than, you know, Mrs. Jones's recovery down the street, because, you know, that person, you know, is doing volume business and, you know, and they need to get back, and somebody will make the excuse, we need James Farr's apartments back up here so that he could, you know, help restore the economy. And if I remember correctly, the trick bag is that y'all didn't have a lot of apartments like that, but now the call that's, is that, to have
that's,
it.
That's what they're trying to fight off. You know, I think of, you spoke about renters, and you have multi-generational homes, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the houses, you know, lots had ADUs or other back houses and whatnot. But, you know, let's just say, you know, you're living with grandmama. You've been living with grandmama. Take care of grandmama because you're the favorite grandson and everybody in the family know it, right?
Right.
And nobody got no problem with Davey. Davey been taking care of Big Mama since day one, right?
Right.
But you never had a lease with Big Mama.
Yeah,
you can't prove that you were actually living there and taking care of Big Mama, which means you get no relief. Big Mama does. You don't.
Wow. Wow.
And then let's say you get creative and figure out some paperwork. And you turn that into FEMA.
Right.
Now you're going to trigger the IRS because they're going to say, hey, Big Mommy, Davey been paying you $2,000 a month for the last 12 years and you ain't claimed it, Big Mama.
So now
Uncle
you
Sam,
owe...
you're going to have to run us that money, Big Mama.
So you owe us, you know, and it don't matter that I'm her nephew.
No.
We want our money, so she might lose the house just on that.
Now she has a tax liability.
It's a cold, cold world, Brother James.
It's cold, brother. We on our own, man.
It's a cold world. Thank you for sharing with us. How do we get a hold of you?
You can check me out, KBLA Talk 1580, Conversation Live, Altadena Rising. You can read me at laprogressive.com. You can follow me across social media at James Farr Live.
There you have it. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
My last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. One of the things that's starting to happen as we're seeing a lot of defunding, we're seeing increased repression of diverse spaces. A lot of people are pulling back. We're seeing that folks who are forward thinking are rallying around culture. Culture is now having, I think, an extra type of premium. And not so much because it's something that can make you money, but because it's something that's healing. It's a way for community to come together at a time when all the stops are being pulled to keep community divided. And we've been looking at the proliferation of plays that are coming up. And so we've been talking with playwrights and all that. And we're looking at the number of independent films that are starting to emerge. And now we also have a live venue that is happening live at Vibe in Richmond. And I thought this was pretty interesting for a couple of reasons, because the person that is behind it, her name is Free Brown. She's not just a promoter, but she's a licensed mental health therapist, cultural curator, and entrepreneur, among other things. I was very intentional about talking about the aspect of healing and spaces being kind of taking a premium on. Am I wrong in understanding it that way? Because that's the vibe I'm seeing. Folks are like, thank God I'm able to come to this spot and just see my people and just kind of release. And, you know, it's a different energy right now.
Yes, yes, yes. Belonging, especially just with the racial dynamics and social dynamics that we've had, being around people where you feel as if you belong is important. And then, of course, coming out of COVID, where we were quarantined, healing spaces is, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a trend. It's always been important. The first thing that people will do is huddle together with folks they feel as if they belong with, even if they don't speak the same language. We'll find something to kind of latch us to our humanity. And so coming out of COVID, the racial issues that we've always had, systematic oppression across various groups has always created space where wellness and belonging are essential. So yeah, it's always been here and it's always been time. So it's not that we needed the certain election that we had or anything. It's always been time, always been relevant to have space where you can be. Mm-hmm.
I think in theory, yes. And I would agree with you. We don't necessarily need the election. COVID was a space where we saw people yearning to come together. But we're also dealing with something that hasn't been as prevalent and as out in the open as we're seeing now, which is going to a place and saying, hey, if you start having diverse crowds, you can kiss your funding goodbye, right? And folks capitulating left and right. That I've seen, you know. Yes. There's a lot of places that have been like, hey, Free, you know, we want to work with you, but, you know, we're just not going to get that federal dollars. And adding to the viciousness of that, sending folks into spaces, you know, is kind of the hallmark now, and saying, oh, I saw a lot of black and brown folks there, and I think it must be some sort of DEI thing. Now, I think it's just state-sanctioned trolling, but our money is tied up into that, and the type of capitulations that I've been seeing have been disheartening, and, mm-hmm. you know, to see others like yourself stepping up. That's what I mean when I say I think there's a premium to it, that this is important, that it hits different, you know?
Yeah, definitely hits different now. Absolutely agree. One position that I find myself in with Vibe, and not bragging in any way, when I say it was built by blood, sweat, and tears, it was built by blood, sweat, and tears. There was no funding. The funding has only been me going to work and pulling in, you know, I'll buy this, I'll work a little harder and get this and get that. So I'm very particular as we get into our nonprofit space about who is even allowed to give us funding. I would much rather have a little mocktail, have a little cocktail, sell those things, and then we can use that to make our classes low income and accessible for others. So I've been very particular about how we will bring in the oversight in the eyes. And working in mental health and community mental health, we had a lot of funders, people who wanted data and information, and I wasn't always sure where that information was going. So with Vibe and Art at Vibe and Live at Vibe, I'm very particular about who we would even accept dollars from, because honestly, I don't want to be told what to do. Someone saying, oh, well, Free, we would really like to work with you, but oh goodness, we can't. And it's like, well, you didn't really have an option to. You weren't invited to give. And that's kind of the vibe that I'm coming with, is I think we can do it on our own. And certain things we can do on our own. And I'm going to give it a try, where this is very much so community funded. Very much so we're giving into the arts in the way that we can and supporting our own in the way that we can, because I don't want to find myself in a place where it's okay to keep the lights on. We can't have this particular speaker or this artist because they've spoken out against something that would make our funders upset. So to your point, absolutely. It is a delicate balance that folks with spaces and programs are having to walk. and almost having to apologize and say, okay, you know, this work isn't necessary. We're not going to say black. We're not going to say diverse. We're not going to say insecurity. We're not going to say racism. And we're not, and I want to say all those things. So I'd rather right. not accept it than have to go back on what it is that I said that I was here for.
Right. And we've seen some local artists really get penalized for speaking out. Kalani is one that immediately comes to mind. And, you know, I'm glad she was able to stand ten toes down and stay with her conviction as she spoke out against Palestine. But you saw those type of capitulations, mm-hmm. you know, not just here, but around the country. Like, oh, she said it, she can't perform. And those are the types of things that has made this time very challenging for some. With that in mind, as you were talking, I was thinking about the history of venues that have kind of come with that sort of spirit. You know, we heard of the Good Life Cafe down in LA, you know, a health food store that became a central place for, you know, for hip hop, the burgeoning, you know, hip hop scene that wasn't gangster rap coming out of LA. And so many people came out of that space. And then at the same time, we had the Upper Room with Rafiq Bilal and, you know, the burgeoning scene that was coming up over here, both in San Francisco and then in Oakland. And then you also had the cafe with, you know, the Bored Stiff and Equipto's mom had. I'm going to remember the name. But those spaces were rooted in community and seemed to be a haven that had a politic attached to it. It wasn't just that you showed up and did your craft, but you kind of needed to be community oriented. Is this where you're coming from with this as well?
Both and. So a lot of people are still developing their voice and they don't know how to articulate that. So I don't want to come with, okay, you know what, you're not defined and you're not saying this in the way. So it's kind of a, I'm going to say this in halfway, not mean it. It's kind of an open door. Artists need to express and work through their things, how they feel about their politics, how they feel about their blackness, how they feel about their being. So that's mm-hmm. that one side is giving people space to kind of process who and what they are. You definitely have to be saying something, you know, music is supposed to inspire, as they say, how come we ain't getting no higher? So that's definitely a part of it. But it's also a place for artists to work through their things. Folks are needing to live and survive, right? They're needing to feed themselves. And I want to kind of keep that door open and not say, okay, because you don't have this particular stance in this particular way, then our doors are shut to you. You have to have a stance. I'll never forget, someone told me, you know, they were sitting down with me and trying to reel me in on something. And they said, Free, you know, we all need to get on the same page and we all need to sit down until we're on the same page. And I said, I'm not of that mind. I believe that we should all have a general goal and how we get there. Some are boat people, plane, train, automobile, scooter, walk. I don't need the foot people to be on the bicycle people's path. However you get over there. We don't right. always need to be on the same page, but I do need us to be going in the same direction with the same general goal. Get there how you can. And so that's how I kind of feel about the art and the space. Get there how you can. And so I find myself being open to all kinds of people of religion, orientations or not, because it's the general goal is to love, empower, and to really get these people's foot off our neck.
Right.
And so however you get to that, I'm with you.
Yeah, I also meant to include Java House in that trajectory. So Live at Vibe, you're doing several things with this, and the key word is curating. Let's talk a little bit about it, you know, and as you said, this is blood, sweat, and tears. So what are the immediate plans for this? I know you got the homie Jerry Dove up there.
Yes.
So that's a good start. You know, big shout out to Jerry, who does, I heard that song before. You know,
his show. I remember that song.
I remember that song. Thank
I remember you. That song.
So,
and it's Tuesday nights at 7.
Thank you. He will throw me down a cliff. Like, how you get the name of the song, the show wrong? But no, you know, he has that whole crew of people, and it's always a family vibe when you peep it. So he's a host. But talk a little bit about what the plans are.
All right. So Live at Vibe. It has its features. It's starting. It's new. We're at 1503 McDonald Avenue, Suite B in Richmond, California, right next to the BART station, Amtrak station. You can get here by ferry. We have AC transit. You can get to Vibe from anywhere. And that's what I say is here in Richmond, we have the doorstep to the world. If you can find your way to an airport 200 feet away from us, that's where you'll find Vibe Bistro. So the goal, the overall goal, right now we have veteran artists coming through every other week all the way until December. And what I'm wanting them to do is to set the tone, to set the vibe for this space, this gateway. And I've appreciated them giving their time and talent to say, okay, we'll come over here and we'll bless the stage and we'll build it. So our goal is later on, when other people stand here, they have to really be about something. It's been too much energy. And the goal is to make this a gateway where people just not from Richmond, just not from the Bay, but from around the world see this as a cultural landmark where they just had to be here. I keep getting offers to duplicate this. And honestly, I need to get this off the ground and I'm tired. So yeah, I'm okay with it being a one of one. You didn't ask the Apollo to be in 50 different states. You had to be there at that time to get it. And the idea that something can always be packaged and repackaged for you to see it later. You need to experience it now. So we have our artists coming out live and in person to give their art and give their craft and give their energy to the space, to baptize it, to sanctify it, to make it all those things. And then we'll have our emerging artists come through. People who probably don't have their own material that can be 15 minutes, and we'll give them the stage and give them space to be seen and be heard. So that's the goal, is to create a gateway, a cultural landmark where we have it here. And there are probably a multitude of other ones around the country. So this isn't the only one, but we're going to have us one, another one here in the Bay in Richmond.
So when is the kickoff?
The kickoff is this Friday with Valerie Trout. Doors open at 7 p.m.
You don't know about no Valerie Trout.
I love Valerie. I appreciate her so much. Because if there was it, I'm like, how do we do this? And how do I take care of artists? In talking to a lot of artists, I do see how they leave themselves exposed a little bit. And I, you know, I'm like, oh, well, how much are your rates? Where, oh, you know, I'm gonna just come off in there for the strength of, and I'm gonna just do it for, and I'm like, nah, give me a number. You give me something. Let me know what it means. Let's write this down. You know, I'm gonna take care. I appreciate you for wanting to take care of me, but I want you to also guard your grill. And after me, you know, this is how we sit down. We talk about, you know, where's my merch table? You know, how do I get paid? When do I get paid? Talking to Valerie, and Valerie and her partner have a, Because of Black Music I Am, where they're collecting the stories of artists and talking about how do they take care of themselves. So I've appreciated Valerie for going first with this idea.
Right. No, that's a stellar artist to deal with. Bree Brown has been our guest. Let everybody know Friday will be the kickoff for something that, you know, is really curated and centered around community and uplifting mental health, among other things, and, you know, providing people with opportunity to reflect, uplift, heal, all that good stuff is in the forefront. What's the name of the place? How can we get more information, and what's the address?
Yes, vibebistro.com. That's our website, www.vibebistro.com. It houses all current information, our social media, live at Vibe. Happens Fridays. Check our calendar to see the artists that we have performing. We're booked all the way until December 12th. Live music, house band, DJ, hosted by Jerry Dove.
Well, there you
and this is it. A ticketed event. That's what the one thing I want to say. It is ticketed. So just don't show up. Free set, show up. Please get your tickets. Grab a seat.
And there you have it. Well, we appreciate your efforts. Thank you for talking with us this afternoon. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We're out for now. Peace.
Hard Knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris, Juwan, Kim. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation.
vision. Anything else is just imitation, simulation. Step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
Thank you.
This is KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Locus Focus, a weekly conversation about our place on the planet, every Monday morning at 10 on KBOO Community Radio. Each week, host Barbara Bernstein talks with local